Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have Bears' final 53-man roster and practice squad and pregame in the Green Bay Packers game. We've got Cubs in the thick of the wild card and division races. We got White Sox doing whatever it is the White Sox do and more. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is not going on right now, but it will be starting up next month. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing just swell. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, we've got a lot to talk about. So where do you want to start here?
Well, we do have a lot to talk about. Well, we got this Bears 53-man roster, and I don't know about you, but I can't really say there were many surprises on how this got put together, but certainly would love to hear your input as well.
You know, I have a few thoughts, and you're right. There was nothing, not a ton of surprising cuts. I know some people on the radio were saying that they were surprised Kendall Vildor got cut, and I'm not sure why, because leading up to last year, everyone was like, he's a disaster, he's bad. And last year he was meh. He was meh. He got he had to step up because of so many injuries to Kyler Gordon, to Jalen Johnson, and we were playing with undrafted rookies and guys off the street. But to be honest with you, he got outplayed by players like Jalen Jones and Josh Blackwell, and we added talent. I mean, we added Tyreek Stevenson with a second round pick, which is immediately going to displace him. And then Terrell Smith, who was a fifth round pick, played extremely well, outplayed him as well. And then Jalen Jones and Josh Blackwell are back. Kyler Gordon is healthy. Jalen Johnson is healthy. There was the numbers game. I don't wish anything bad on Kendall Vildor. He played a lot better last year. It just was a numbers game. And the upside on some of these younger players was better than what you could get from him. So I wish him well with the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, how could they cut Kendall Vildor? And, you know, to your point, last year he was serviceable, I'd say. He was definitely seemingly better than he was before. I mean, my main frustration with Vildor on a number of times was I felt like he was in, again, there were times when he got just absolutely burned, but I felt like there were times when he was in really good position to defend, but he just didn't make a play on the ball. It's like, you're there, but you can't make the play on the ball when you should make the play on the ball. That was probably one of my bigger gripes with Kendall Vildor. But, you know, to your point, last year, he was okay. But, you know, this isn't some, oh my gosh, how could they cut Kendall Vildor? So I did project him to originally make the roster before camp, but I certainly wasn't saying, hey, this is 100% a lock by any means.
Why I thought he was definitely not going to make it. And, you know, talent wise, you could be like, oh, you know, comparable to some of the back end guys, maybe, but younger, cheaper. And that put them at an advantage. And plus, Jalen Jones is a special teams ace. Mm-hmm. If you're a back end of the roster cornerback, you better play special teams. And I can't think of Kendall Vildor being a special teams ace at all.
No,
or making
no,
big
no,
plays.
No.
So that's the separator. The big separator is Jalen Jones played exceptionally well in special teams this preseason. And he's cheaper. He's like over $1 million a year cheaper, like $1.5 million. And he plays better special teams and is comparable as a defender and is a growing player, an ascending player.
Yeah, there's more upside there.
Kendall Vildor is probably at the, I mean, what has he been in, like 4 years? So he's like in his prime and the other players ascending. So yeah, it's really nothing, a knock and not a shit on him. I hope he does well. You know, the Bears drafted him and I hope he does well in the league. So root for him in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another name that people were surprised by was Trevis Gibson. And here's my thoughts on it. He had a great preseason, but it was not with the starters. It was with the backups. And
yeah,
the Bears wanted a guy that was a better fit for the 4-3 front that they, as their standard front. Trevis Gibson is better fit for a 3-4. When they brought him in, the Bears played a 3-4. And it's a better fit for him. And I think it was one of those where they knew what they had. And is it possible? I mean, he's probably a better pass rusher than Khalid Kareem, who has that same roster spot. Probably a better pass rusher, but Trevis Gibson is not going to be, you know, they know who he is in this system. And I think that was a let him go for his own benefit, knowing he's going to get picked up by somebody. Let him have a chance to flourish. I looked at that as a favor to him rather than a, you know, an indictment on him being a quality player.
And, you know, the last few years, I was kind of sitting and hoping that Trevis Gibson would kind of take a bigger step forward, because I think we saw some things like a few seasons ago, like in 2020, where we thought, hey, you know, maybe we have something good here. And I don't want to say he's been bad, but it's just what you had hoped that you had gotten from him just never really quite reached that. And hopefully if he goes somewhere that's more suited to him, he will, because I do like him as a player. I just don't think he took that step that I thought he was going to.
Yeah, he ended up going with Kendall Vildor to Tennessee.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe that suits out better for both of them. One of them, I don't really know, but I was kind of hoping that Trevis Gibson would be part of this team, because I still think there is something there. But I think that this cut, to all the reasons you mentioned, whether it was doing him a favor to get him into a better system, I think that's valid. And it's not one that I'm going to, at the moment, lose sleep over. You know, obviously, maybe he goes to Tennessee and he just plays great. But you know what? That could be in part of the system he's in that just wouldn't fit here in Chicago.
Yeah, and honestly, it's funny because we heard the reports that he demanded a trade and the Bears were trying to trade him. And both he and Ryan Poles came out afterwards and said, no, there was no trade demand. I'm guessing that report was somebody that knew that they had talked about things. And my guess is Poles let him know that he probably wasn't going to make the squad and the reasons behind, and let him know he was going to cut him to try to latch on with somebody else. But it doesn't seem like, I don't, based on what the two of them said, it doesn't seem like there was any animosity, which is good. You don't want a player to leave angry.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where when Ryan Poles was asked about the question, he didn't really dance around it or try to, you know, word salad it. He just flat up said, no, that's not true. So I think your theory is probably pretty likely on what happened. But, you know, either way, you know, he's no longer here. And We'll see. We'll see how this pass rush does.
I'm a little worried about the pass rush and the defensive line in general, to be honest with you.
That I think it's one of their glaring weaknesses.
Based on lack of, and part of it might be, I just haven't seen enough of the new players.
We didn't really see Yannick Ngakoue in action because we signed him late.
Yeah. We haven't seen Walker. We just haven't seen this line together yet. So,
and I mean, here's the thing. Even if Yannick Ngakoue has a really good season, you know, that's one guy. You were the worst team in all of football in terms of recording sacks and getting pressure on the quarterback. So it wasn't just, hey, we're one guy away. You need kind of a complete revamp to get probably back to mid-form. I mean, with Yannick Ngakoue, you should definitely, as long as he's healthy and playing the way he should, be improved from last year, but it's still probably not going to be nearly enough for where you would ideally be. I mean, you are light years away from being the Eagles in terms of getting pressure and getting to the quarterback.
I have a feeling that the Bears are going to use a really high draft pick on an edge rusher in this next draft.
Wouldn't surprise me. Surprise me at all.
And then the last of the reasonably surprise cuts is Terrell Lewis, who's another preseason standout. And again, you know, we have to be very cautious about overstating the results from preseason, because, you know, players are playing against backups as well. And Terrell Lewis played well, but he went through waivers and wasn't claimed, and he's still a free agent. And the Bears didn't put him on the practice squad. So, is it potential for him to come back? Absolutely. But right now, you know, 32 teams have passed him up, and regardless of what they saw on tape in the preseason, he just, you know, it's not looking like he's a desired guy.
Yeah.
So we can go through the roster here, and so they have 7 wide receivers on the roster, and they have Trent Taylor, who was a pickup after cut down.
He used to be on the Bengals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was actually one of their surprise cuts.
Yeah.
Equanimeous St. Brown, Tyler Scott, DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney, Velus Jones, and Chase Claypool. And we have my surprise is that they went with 7 wide receivers.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when I made my initial projected depth chart, I had 6. I think most people had 6. And, you know, I was wondering, was Velus Jones going to make this roster? I feel like the uncertainty there was a bit higher than what other people were feeling at the time. But, you know, would you be surprised if Velus Jones was a no dress in week 1 against the Packers next week?
I think he'll be dressed. I think he's the kick returner. I think he'll be dressed.
Because isn't that what kind of Trent Taylor is good at doing?
He's the punt returner. And I was a little surprised by him picking up. They must really feel that there's no punt returner on this team, because that's really what he is. He's a punt returner. And so,
he didn't do kicks as well. I knew he'd do punts, but I didn't know if he did kicks or not. I don't know much about him, but if he's going to be a kick returner, then yeah, I guess you do.
So they bring him in as the punt returner, and that's a little bit of a shock. Just they must really not feel confident in Velus doing punt returns, despite what they said. So you have 7 guys, and I think that's going to change. I don't think they're going to carry 7. I think they're going to evaluate things and make a decision, but I can't see them carrying seven wide receivers for the whole season. That's a lot.
I mean, I look
if you have one that's just a punt returner.
Right, and I look at this right now and I'm thinking, you have Equanimeous St. Brown really to be a wide receiver, and he's very good at that, but he's not a guy you want to throw downfield to.
Yeah, I don't know what his role is. So we'll see. But I think that's an excessive number of wide receivers. Unless the only thing I can think of is if somebody's not healthy. We'll find that out when we have the official,
is there concern about Chase Claypool
or Darnell Mooney? If one of them is where they feel that they're maybe iffy for week one, but not bad enough to put them on IR, then maybe that's why they're carrying seven, and they'll cut that down, you know, once the other player's healthy. That's my only thoughts on that. We'll find out when the official injury report comes out.
Yep.
Three tight ends, not surprising. Cole Kmet, Robert Tonyan, and Mercedes Lewis. So no surprises there. That seemed pretty logical. Everybody else was, I think, let go on injury-related cuts.
Yeah, no surprise. That's pretty much what we all expected.
Yeah, the only option there was, you know, would they have kept a fourth? But those three were making it.
Yep.
Running back / fullback, they kept five. Blossingame, Roschon Johnson, Travis Homer, Khalil Herbert, and Deontay Foreman.
Seems like Khalil Herbert's probably going to be RB1, and then Dante Foreman and Roschon Johnson. I mean, Travis Homer's kind of your blocking guy. I don't think you're going to be
handing the ball off. He's really, he's the back end. And so they must really love him for the special teams, because I don't think he's going to get a lot of carries.
No, he's not. He's not. He's going to be blocking out there.
He's going to be out there as a special teamer. And I think that's where they love him. So they kept an extra guy to play special teams.
Which is fine. And, you know, you look at your top two, probably going to be Herbert and Foreman. And then you got the rookie Johnson, who's got upside. So, you know, you could kind of mix and match here. I think that obviously Khalil Herbert's probably going to be your number one, but, you know, Deontay Foreman's your veteran with experience. Roschon Johnson is your rookie with upside. So, you know, maybe you kind of make this a three-headed monster at times, but I mean, it shouldn't be any surprise that Herbert's probably going to be running back one, because he's been here. He's been the system. He knows the system.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm a big fan of the way the NFL goes, is feed the hot hand.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, having a guy that that'll pound the ball and make the contacts, break tackles, is the guy that's going to do better against a specific defense on a specific day. And sometimes it's the guy that is going to stretch that defense or bounce to an open hole. And that's the guy that's going to, you know, do well. I'm for riding the hot hand of the day. It's going to give you the best chance.
Yeah.
They kept three quarterbacks. This was a little bit of a surprise. PJ Walker, we talked about, let go because he just wasn't playing well, and they were not afraid to make that. You know, I think him not playing well and Tyson Bagent playing very well for a lot less money, I think that just open the door. And I know I talked to a lot of people that were like, they were shocked that the Bears on the initial 53 only kept two quarterbacks, Justin Fields and Tyson Bagent, and they let Peterman walk. And I was not surprised at that at all. I was like, yeah, I expect Peterman to be back. I thought on the practice squad, but they put him on the 53. But somebody was like, well, why, if he's going to be your QB2? I don't know if he's going to be QB2 or not. But he, is Tyson Bagent has a chance to be picked up off of waivers. Nathan Peterman, I don't think does.
Right.
So you put Nathan Peterman out there, there's a very low chance he's going to get picked up. Tyson Bagent, there's a real possibility, because it just takes one team to be like, I see upside in him and I'm going to pick him up, and he's gone. So that's why he was kept and Peterman was let go. And I was sure they were going to bring him back. I just thought it'd be on the practice squad.
Yeah, I thought so too. I really did. And you know what? It's fine because at the end of the day, I wanted to see Tyson Bagent on this roster. And listen, I understand he played in preseason. And if he is going to grow into an NFL quarterback, there's a lot more work that has to be done. He hasn't seen a real NFL game yet. It's very different than a preseason game. It truly, truly is. But there's upside here with this kid, I think. The way he works, the way he executes himself, the calm demeanor he has while playing, I think that's all very notable. PJ Walker, just really dreadful camp. It just, there was nothing you looked at from PJ Walker. You're like, okay, I feel good about this being our QB2. It just, it was a disaster. And I hope he does well, because I know he got picked up by somebody, but I hope everything works out there, but it just, it was clear it was not going to work out here. It just, again, I know it's preseason, but it looked bad.
Yeah. They kept one punter, Tretton Gill. They kept only 8 offensive linemen. And with the injuries that we saw in preseason, this was the biggest shock to me, that they only kept 8. Darnell Wright, Cody Whitehair, Lucas Patrick, Braxton Jones, Dan Feeney, who they brought in as a trade, who can play both guards and center position, Nate Davis, Jatyr Carter, and Larry Borum. They moved Doug Jones and Tevin Jenkins to injured reserve. And so only 8 guys, which is surprising.
This worries me, man. I mean, Tevin Jenkins being on the IR, that really, really sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. It's only 4 weeks. So hopefully he comes back with a vengeance. It's going to be interesting, though, to see how this plays out, because are you going to try to keep the continuity? If you're like, all right, Tevin Jenkins, our guy, so we're going to keep Cody Whitehair at center and move Dan Feeney to guard. I just don't know how they're going to play this out. I just don't want Lucas Patrick out there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Feeney is just, he holds his own. I'm not expecting great, but you hopefully you get something solid enough where you're like, okay, he can hold his own out there. He's looking fine when he is out there. You don't expect him to be a top 3 guy on your offensive line by any means, but you needed some depth. You needed some help. Then, you know, Feeney comes from a good system. So in Miami, so you hope that works out okay.
Yeah. And he's a guy with a mullet, missing teeth, drinking beer. Like, that's the offensive lineman you want out there.
The Rod Beck of offensive linemen.
Yeah, he's the shooter. So it's going to be interesting to see how they line up. I mean, obviously we know the 2 tackles. I'm assuming Nate Davis is going to be the right guard, but it's going to be who's going to be center, who's going to be left guard. And, it, you know, I don't know if we have an indication yet, but I mean, if they expect Tevin Jenkins to be healthy and playing, I think they may want to keep the continuity and keep Cody Whitehair at center and just plug in the guard. So that way, when Jenkins comes back, you're not reshuffling. You're just swapping one guy for one guy.
I agree. And I mean, how many games has Whitehair played in the NFL under center, or not under, at center, I should say?
Quite a few.
Quite a few. Exactly. You know, it seems like that'd be the most logical way to go about it.
Yeah. You've got a young quarterback that you're trying to develop. You don't want to keep swapping his center out. Long snapper, 1, Patrick Scales. Linebackers, they kept 5. Not too surprising. Noah Sewell, who must be healthy after he was shaken up in that last game. Jack Sanborn, TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, and Dylan Cole. So not anything terribly surprising there.
No. And I think Sewell is, you know, can be a solid part of that linebacking core, but obviously all eyes are going to be on Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. They're really your 2 big free agent signings right there. And, you know, Tremaine Edmonds, you just hope he has a healthy season. I feel pretty good about TJ Edwards. I believe he was one of the leading tacklers in the NFL last year with the Eagles. So he's, you know, in his prime right now. And we know how good Tremaine Edmonds could be. Tremaine Edmonds, you know, he's the type of guy that is able to get the ball. He's able to get turnovers. That's a good thing. And you hope that Jack Sanborn continues what he did last year, because that was a guy that kind of came out of nowhere. And you watch him on the field and he gets to the ball really quick. You're like, wow, this guy's all over the place.
It's funny because, you know, you look at his measurables and you're like, yeah, this is not, I mean, you watched his tape. Tape was great, but you're like, the measurables don't seem like they're going to translate. And for some reason they did. And there's still holes. Like he's not fast enough. And that's a big gap in his game is the speed, but his ability to diagnose plays and make tackles just keeps him in it.
Well, he's smart. He's a smart player, yep. And that's why he gets everywhere. You know, it's not like you're watching a guy who zooms from one field to end of the field to the other. He gets there seeming deceptively quickly because he knows what's going on.
Yeah, it's his pursuit speed that he's, you know, when he's breaking, you know, going for a play that's stretched out and he's going in for the diving in for a tackle, or then he's fine there, but it's, you know, covering on pass plays and in pursuit. That's where the trouble is, but he's a nice player and, you know, a guy that you brought in as an undrafted rookie. So it's a good story.
Yeah. And again, you just hope that last year wasn't a flash in the pan. They can continue to do what he does, but you know, you feel solid about a guy who has that kind of IQ because you're like, listen, you can have all the talent in the world physically, but if you're not smart, then you're not going to play well. If this guy's healthy, but he continues to play smart and diagnose what's going on, you feel a lot better about him performing well.
Right. Cairo Santos, they won kicker, not surprising. 9 defensive linemen, DeMarcus Walker, Dominique Robinson, Zach Pickens, Yannick Ngakoue, Khalid Kareem, the guy they brought in from the Colts, Justin Jones, Rasheem Green, Jervon Dexter, Andrew Billings. Not terribly surprising there. I just hope that they're serviceable. I don't need them to be superstars because we know that's where they're going to attack next season in free agency in the draft, but they've just got to be serviceable.
Yeah, and we talk about getting pressure on the quarterback all the time, but there's another element to this too, and that's the ability to stop the run. You got to stop the ground game. Yeah.
That's my worry is if you can stop the run, and I don't even need you to be super stout, just don't let them gash you.
Right, exactly. And you don't want them.
All right. So yeah, the defense, I just worry about being gashed by the run. If they can be serviceable and not get gashed and be middle of the road as far as run defense, I can live with it.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't want it to be like last year where they were able to run on you at will. I mean, weren't they like last or among the last in yards allowed rushing total?
I seem to remember that without looking it up. I would guess yes. They were pretty bad against the run.
Yeah. So be halfway decent. If you're like middle of the road, then that can make a pretty big difference. You know, you look at some of the games last year that you lost because you couldn't stop the run. Heck, you remember the Eagles game. The Bears made it very close, had maybe a chance if they got a stop, and the Eagles were just kind of able to gash you and end that game. So that right. does make a pretty big difference.
Right. And then the Bears kept 10 defensive backs, 6 corners and 4 safeties. Tyreek Stevenson, Terrell Smith, Jalon Jones, Jalon Johnson, Josh Blackwell, and Kyler Gordon are their corners. And Quindell Johnson, who they brought in after the cuts as safety, along with Eddie Jackson, Jaquan Brisker, and Elijah Hicks.
Feeling pretty solid about the secondary. I think the big thing is Tyreek Stevenson has a really high ceiling. but I think you're going to see some growing pains with him, particularly with penalties.
Oh, absolutely. I agree fully. I think by the end of the season, we're going to love him.
Talent's there.
Yeah, talent's there. It's just, and he's aggressive. It's just, you know, transitioning that from college to pros. You're going to see he's going to have to, you know, get the feeling in there. And sometimes you're going to have bad games where the refs let him play and he is on it. And sometimes they're going to be calling everything and he's going to have to learn to back off a little bit.
I mean, he's aggressive and physical. So yeah. I think you're going to see a number of flags on him early on.
Right. There's something I wanted to go through, and you know, I know as Bears fans, we're terribly worried that Jordan Love is going to be great.
Yeah. Huh.
So this may have nothing to do with anything, but fantasy football drafts have mostly happened at this point. And I saw statistics that were done based on where quarterbacks were drafted, and they put them in eight buckets. The eighth bucket would just not really count. That's backups that are probably never going to play.
Right.
Like Tyson Bagent would be in there. Like nobody's picking those guys up. But tier one is Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Jalen Hurts.
Shocking.
The seventh one is like the low end starters. Josh Dobbs, Garner Minshew, Kyle, or, you know, either guys that are either low end starters or backups that you expect to probably play quite a bit. So they put Baker Mayfield / Kyle Trask, because one of those, you know, those are the two guys that'll probably go back and forth.
Sure.
Garner Minshew, Josh Dobbs,
Andy Dalton, probably.
Yeah. And Desmond Ridder. That's the seventh tier.
Yeah.
What tier do you think Justin Fields is in?
Five.
Two.
Two.
Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Justin Fields, and Trevor Lawrence. It's tier two.
I'm going to assume that Joe Burrow is only in tier two because of the injury.
Probably. What tier do you think Jordan Love is? And this is based on how people actually drafted in their fantasy drafts.
Four.
Five.
Five, okay.
With Brock Purdy, Sam Howell, Matt Stafford, and Derek Carr. So I know as Bears fans, we're nervous, but it does not seem like most football fans are believers. And I have in my draft or my pool, I have a diehard Packers fan. And at a certain point, I was like, hey, I just want to point out that Anthony Richardson was drafted before Jordan Love. I'm like, are you no longer a believer? And he goes, I try not to be a homer in the draft. So even he is not a true believer. Just whatever that is worth.
You know, I mean, here's my thing with how I see Jordan Love. I don't think he's going to be as bad as people say. I mean, it would really just kill me if he was another Hall of Famer. But I know a lot of people I talk to, they kind of say maybe he's like a Mitchell Trubisky type, where you can put up some solid, decent numbers and you can do some solid things, but you're not going to be elite. And maybe that's what's more realistic for his ceiling. I mean, if he's good, not great, then at least you could say, you know what? You can beat good, not great. But if he's great, that makes things a lot more complicated.
Just imagine, I know this is super hypothetical, but just imagine Justin Fields throws for 300, two tutties, runs for 70 yards, and runs for another touchdown, and Jordan Love throws for 130 yards and three picks. Like,
I mean, that'd be dreamland for the Bears.
Oh, that would be, I mean, can you imagine the narrative, how bad that would flip? you would see Wisconsinites losing their minds, and it would be amazing to watch. Because here's the thing is NFL fans and NFL media, their knee-jerk reaction. So like if that is number one week one, is they're going to be all aboard the Justin Fields train. Everyone's going to be like, Jordan Love is trash and a bust.
Now, if it's the other way around, it's going to be the same way.
Yeah, but I don't want to think that bad.
I don't either, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, here are the concerns I have going against this Green Bay team. One, what their defensive line could do against the Bears, and what their running game can do against the Bears. And I'm not picturing Jordan Love going out there and throwing a bunch of 50-yard bombs. I'm worried about him rolling back, finding, you know, Christian Watson in the flat somewhere in the middle of the field, and just dinking and dunking you to death and just getting a lot of yak against you. That's what I'm worried about. And, you know, they got a real good running back in Jones. Just him gashing you and their defensive line gashing you and getting to Justin Fields. That's really what I'm more worried about than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think Green Bay is going to try to be conservative here because they have an easy schedule to start off, and they want to start it off by beating the Bears. They don't want to lose to the Bears. So I think they're going to try to be conservative and hope that the Bears just can't beat them. So you're going to see them try to play ground control or ball control, run the ball and short passes and methodical, you know, and keep the ball out of Justin Fields' hands. And I think honestly is I know we all want to see Justin Fields turn it loose with his arm. I think this is going to be a game where his legs are going to be huge.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Is I don't believe in the back seven for the Packers. So if you can roll out in that defensive line and find a lane, take it and run.
Cause they're going to be going after him.
Yeah. And you know, a dream scenario would be is he burns them for a big run. They overcommit. He rolls out like he's going to run, and there's a broken play, and he just throws, you know, a 40-yard pass to DJ Moore, who moonwalks into the end zone.
That would be great.
So I'm ready for week one. We're a week away. Next time when we talk, we'll have, you know, we'll be able to discuss Bears Packers. I'm ready for the season here.
Yeah, I mean, it's time. Whether we like it or not, it's time. Ready or not, it's time.
So do you want to talk Cubs or you want to talk White Sox? So there's a lot to say about both sides.
Well, I think White Sox, with them, there is a lot to digest. And we heard from somebody we don't normally hear from.
Yeah, let's just pile into there. So I think the big question was when they hired Chris Getz, who was going to be at the press conference? Who was going to present him? I didn't think they would be Jerry Reinsdorf. Did you?
No.
And Jerry Reinsdorf was there and basically just verbally slapped every White Sox fan in their face and said, fuck you. That's what he said.
Fully, pretty much spelling out for you that he wanted nothing to do with searching outside of the organization. Like, Chris Getz was his guy. He knew Chris Getz was his guy. Oh, well, you know, we did evaluations. We wanted to think about this, think about that, think about it from this angle. Clearly, Chris Getz was going to be the guy all along. And you remember, as soon as Kenny and Rick were fired, what did Bob Nightingale say?
Did he say Chris Getz?
Yes. He said Chris Getz is the leading candidate.
Yeah. He didn't interview other people outside the organization. Like, there's the organization is full of badness. Your farm system's bad. The major league roster is bad and flawed. You've got clubhouse issues. There's all kinds of strife. And you don't even want to bring somebody externally in, because you, what it is you don't want to hear from somebody that is not one of your yes men, that what's wrong and why it's your fault, Jerry, why it starts at the top. He doesn't want to hear any of that. He's going to hire another of his yes men.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you exactly why he's like, Chris gets, it's all his decision, whatever he wants to do. That's why that's absolutely a lie. Absolutely 100% a factual lie. Like, that is, there's no doubt about it. It's a lie. It's because what did he say about Shohei Ohtani?
We're not going to go after him. That's for sure.
So you're telling me that a brand new GM / president of baseball operations, who, by the way, they combined two salaries into one.
Yep.
Jerry move.
He literally said Chris Getz will have full control except for the budget. The owner has the right to do that.
Yeah, so it is not full. It's not full. It's Jerry has the say of the budget. So what's
he's
that
already telling Chris Getz he can't go after the best player of our generation.
Yeah, the best player in baseball. He's not allowed to go after him because that would cost money. And he also said we're not going to go after big pitcher deals. So you're right. Not going after quality starting pitchers. You're going to bargain shop for pitchers.
Right. And Sean, listen, I don't think anybody expected the White Sox to truly be in on Shohei Ohtani, but to come out and chuckle about saying that, you know, you're not going to be involved in it, like it's some sort of a ha ha ha, well, don't worry, we're not even going to try for Shohei Ohtani. I mean, what an absolute kick to the balls to your fans. And again, we know it wasn't going to happen, but for him to come out and say that, the other problem too is not only is that insulting to your fans, it's technically illegal according to the CBA. For an owner to say that, according to what people are saying, you can't say that. And that the players' union could file a grievance if they wanted to. It wouldn't do you any good. It wouldn't, because I don't think anything would happen. But if they really wanted to, you would have a reason for the players' union to file a grievance against that. Unfortunately, Jerry's too strong and powerful, so nothing would come of it. But you can't say that.
Yep, and Jerry doesn't care. And another thing that pissed me off is, David Eckstein, yeah, he wants a team of David Ecksteins.
Of and mediocre players?
Is David Eckstein, other than having a hot wife, is his wife is the voice of Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
She's very nice. I've met her. I've met him, too, with her. He was a fine player, but he was a glue player. He was one of those, like, those guys that is the back end of the roster that comes up big. And, you know, but to put, like, him being a winner, you know, that team that won the World Series, it wasn't a team of David Eckstein's. You had in-prime Albert Pujols and in-prime Yadi Molina and Jim Edmonds and Scott Rowland. Like, you had amazing players on that team. And so you're going to give that all the credit to David Eckstein?
Your favorite player. And I'm really not trying to shit on David Eckstein. You know,
No, it's nothing bad on David Eckstein. But the fact that Jerry's looking at, oh, I'd like to have a team of him, acting like that's going to be a winner. Like,
a
we could
701 career OPS.
That's the guy he wants.
And then on top of that, too, he keeps referencing Branch Rickey, who's been dead for what, 50 years?
Oh, yeah.
Branch Rickey is a historic figure in baseball. He brought Jackie Robinson, broke the color barrier. Jerry, I understand. You grew up a Dodgers fan. You watched Jackie Robinson. You were at his debut. Okay, great. But you're talking about managing baseball in 2023, and you're referencing David Eckstein and Branch Rickey. Branch Rickey.
Yeah, here's the big reason he loves David Eckstein. David Eckstein's contracts by year. 1 year, $200,000. 1 year, $280,000. 1 year, $425,000. 1 year, $2.15 million. 3 year, $10.55 million with an average value of $3.5 million. 1 year, $4.5 million. 1 year, $1 million. That's why it's short contracts for low money. And he was on a team that won a World Series. Jerry's, if we got a bunch of cheap players that were on a World Series team, we are going to win a World Series, right? He's just a cheap asshole, and that he does not deserve to be an MLB owner.
Or an NBA owner.
Or an NBA owner.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, Of course, he goes on about, I don't like it when people get mad that we hired Tony La Russa. Blah, we won a division title with Tony La Russa. Oh, and then, you know, last year we were 500. I know it's not playoffs, but that's still competitive. What do you want?
Really? Look at the team that made the playoffs with Tony La Russa. What did that team look like in the second half of the season?
They coasted. It was very mediocre. You didn't have your mean Mercedes going off in the first half.
They played bad baseball. They were a sub 500 team in the second half, and they got smoked in the playoffs. So, okay, you were not a competitive team. There was no chance of you winning a World Series. These fans want a team put together that is going to at least try to win a World Series instead of this team was supposed to, we're going to compete. Is the fact that an off-duty Chicago cop snuck a gun in her fat rolls into the stadium and accidentally shot herself and another person, that just sums up this season. That is
the most bizarre story. That where we don't have any solidified answers. I don't get it.
Yeah, that is the summary of this season. You have that happening and pitcher sleeping in the bullpen. You know, it's just a joke.
And your shortstop getting punched in the face and getting KO'd.
Yeah, he gets knocked out and your catcher and your shortstop fighting. Like, it's and your catcher, you know, leaving before All-Star break. Like, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And I can guarantee you that Chris Getz was not allowed to fire Pedro Grifol because Jerry didn't want to pay two managers. Guaranteed. And
remember when Chris Getz, in his opening presser, he said, hey, guess what? Everything is on the table. Nobody's safe. A few minutes later, we're keeping Pedro Grifol.
Yeah. Did you interview anybody externally? No, you didn't. You didn't even interview anybody.
Just like Tony La Russa. Jerry said we're hiring Tony La Russa. They didn't even bother interviewing anybody else. And you know what else is the real harm of a lot of this stuff? Is when you don't go outside the organization, you get no outside perspective whatsoever. You just have your yes men telling you what you want to hear. Could you imagine? Listen, I get it. Theo Epstein, pipe dream. But just talk to the guy. Invite him to Chicago. Buy him a nice dinner. And just say, hey, you know what? What is your perspective on this? What would you do differently? What would you do if you were president of baseball operations and you had some sort of ownership stake in this team? How would you handle this? You don't have to break the bank to interview guys. Interviews are essentially free. Get a guy on the phone. Just talk to him over Zoom for a few hours. Pick his brain. See what other executives and former personnel from outside the organization have to say. get honest outside opinions. The only opinions you're getting is from just another stooge of the organization. And listen, Chris Getz might do a good job in signings he makes. You know, he might bring in some of the right guys. We don't know. We don't know what he's going to be like from a GM. But when you hear about this emphasis on making the minor league system better, meanwhile, you have Jerry saying, what are you talking about? The minor league system's great. It's fine. Look at all the players it's produced. Look at all the talent we have. Blah, 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 blah. Jerry, you're about to lose 100 games. And you have had a big issue developing a lot from the farm system. But it's everything's good. Everything's great. It's such a mess.
I mean, who's a bigger White Sox homer than AJ Pierzynski?
Hawk, maybe.
Okay. Maybe Hawk. AJ is a White Sox homer. And on his podcast, he ripped this signing or this promotion. And he's like, yeah. I like Chris. He's like, it's just, you know, name a guy on this roster that was homegrown. It's like Moncada was a trade. Cease was a trade. You know, your catcher was
a trade.
Aloy was a trade. Tim Anderson was before Chris Getz. What's his name? Your DH was the number three overall pick. So your expectation is he's going to be a big time contributor, but you know, so like who have they developed? Is Luis Robert was one of the elite, international players. Yeah. And he came right to he was ready to go right off the bat. So you didn't develop him. Like you didn't develop anybody in your farm system. You all brought him in from elsewhere.
Right. And I mean, you know, obviously Luis Robert is far and away your best player right now. And you look at some of the other things and Cease is having a really rough year.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, he's done some really good things. Last year, he was a Cy Young candidate and you hope he rebounds. But you know, he's having a rough year here, but you look at some of the other guys that you've had in the system and you say, okay, go back to even Gordon Beckham way back in the day, how that didn't work out. And then fast forward to remember Carson Fulmer.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what a mess that turned out to be?
Yep.
Look at Michael Kopech.
Kopech has been pretty bad this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you look at success stories of teams like the Astros and the Rays, and you compare those kinds of teams to where the White Sox have been, it just hasn't been anywhere close. The White Sox will tell you, we'll show you, look at us. Look how good we're going to do. Look what a great job we're doing. Applaud us. Meanwhile, you're about to miss out on the postseason in the second consecutive year during a supposed contention window, and you're now 30-whatever games below 500.
Yeah, you were talking about being a contender to win this division and make noise in the playoffs, and you're probably going to lose 100 games.
And you know what else is irritating, too? We talk about it as fans. We've said it on the show a million times, but that's because we're analyzing this as fans. But when you have Jerry Reinsdorf and Chris Getz, the guys who are running your organization, following up with what, you know, Rick Hahn would try to emphasize, they keep using that same, well, you know what, the division's bad, so, you know, that's going to help us along. You can't just sit there and rely on the division being bad for you to be good.
Yeah, eventually they're going to be good. Somebody's going to take that step, and then you're in trouble. Don't wait. Don't just assume, well, the bar's low, so yeah, we don't have to work hard. Pretend you're in the AL East and that you've got to be good to win it.
Remember last year? Remember the attitude last year where the White Sox basically said, we'll just throw our uniforms on the field and we'll win this awful division. And then Cleveland clowned you.
Mm-hmm.
Should that not have been enough to learn, you know what? We probably can't just sit here and talk about the bad division. And yet you're still doing it. You're talking about a bad division. Guess what? You're going to finish in fourth place in that awful division. It is historically bad. And look where you are. How many games are you behind the Twins now? I don't think anyone's even counting anymore.
No, it's just stupid bad. You're a bad team. And the ownership is just abysmal. And I would love to hear the plan. How are you going to get the farm system better? You know, you can't spend money, so you can't make the major league squad better. How are you going to, you know, I'm sure a big chunk of their plan is cross their fingers that Dylan Cease bounces back and trade Dylan Cease.
Yeah. I mean,
if I'm the Cubs, I'm giving them a low ball offer on Dylan Cease and get him in the hope you can get him cheap and bring him back to the pitch lab.
Pitch lab.
Beep, the pitch
boop,
lab.
Beep, 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 bop, boop, boop, beep, bop, boop. Just don't do what you did with Jameson Taillon. We'll talk about that later, but yeah. But I mean, here's the thing too. When you look at the situation that the White Sox have with their farm system, it's like, sure, it got a little better after the trade deadline, but it's like, what, mid-tier at best? And there's a lot of promise in Colson Montgomery. Kid can really hit, but I mean, you're going to need these pitchers to come up too and be effective, because the pitching right now in the White Sox is God awful.
Yeah, and Cease is going to get traded the first opportunity that he's playing well and there's a window to trade him.
Because they sure as hell ain't going to pay him when that time comes.
No, they are not. They're not going to pay him, period. They're not going to pay a pitcher. They said they're not paying a pitcher. And they're not paying Shohei Ohtani. So, and nobody wanted Clevinger. They put him on waivers. They put him on waivers. Why? So they don't have to pay that buyout fee.
Incredible.
And nobody was going to bail the White Sox out of that.
No, nobody wants that turd on their team.
I mean, he's a turd, but he's a turd that's pitching fine. There's, you know, the Reds could use the pitching.
Well, yes. I mean, in terms, if he wasn't a piece of garbage, then yeah, he would have been claimed pretty quickly.
But nobody wanted to bail the White Sox out on that that contract and have that turd on their team. Like, nobody's going to do it.
Right.
He went back to the White Sox, and that's got to be an uncomfortable situation, being like, yeah, we put you on waivers and nobody claimed you. And we did it right after you said that you want to be on this team next year, too. And the reason he wants to be on this team is because it's such a disaster that everybody forgot what a turd he is, and they can focus on that, and he can make...
Because he can get away with it.
Yeah, he can make a lot of money on another team. It's a functional team. People are going to be like, what the fuck is this? But on that disaster of a team where there's so much going on, everybody just forgot about what a turd he is.
Cleveland, in 2020, in the middle of a division race... You remember, the AL Central race in that COVID year was pretty tight. You had what? You had the Twins make it. You had Cleveland made it. You had the White Sox making it. I mean, you know, those teams were in that race. Cleveland is in the thick of it, and they made the postseason, but they went ahead and traded Clevinger when he didn't follow the protocols that they told him to follow. They said, you know what? We don't like the way you behave yourself. You might be a good pitcher, but we're going to trade you. They weren't afraid to do that. Here, the Sox don't care.
Yeah, nope, Sox don't care. So it's. I feel bad for the White Sox. Jerry claims he's going to be here another 10 years. And
he's Mr. Burns.
I don't see how this gets better. I don't know what the path forward is here. Winning in baseball is tough, especially when you have a cheap ass owner who was like, we spent $185 million. Why are people saying we're cheap? Because that's like the middle of the pack of baseball.
You're the biggest contract in White Sox history is Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah.
A barely above replacement level player.
Then I don't want to shit all over Andrew Benintendi, but like I'm shitting on the White Sox. Pay people. Is you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
Jerry just has an office full of monkeys.
That's
can
why.
Can I just share something really quick about I don't want to shit on Benintendi too much, but if you bring him in as just a complimentary piece, fine. You know, batting .275 with a .339 OBP, okay. But the biggest contract in White Sox history has a .712 OPS and a .95 OPS plus.
And how many home runs?
5.
There you go.
The biggest contract in White Sox history is most likely going to finish with single-digit homers. And listen, if you want to shit on the Cubs with Jason Hayward, fine, you can do that. But I'm just...
I mean, they're not analogous, but it's, you know, just is you...
You could have done so much better. You could have brought in Andrew Benintendi and more talent at more expensive because you can afford it, but you don't.
Yeah, you've got to take swings in order to try to win things.
Yeah, I mean, just...
Or be so exceptionally good at developing players like the Rays.
Yeah, if you're going to be cheap and not want to spend, then you should be constantly churning out top-tier talent so then you could trade it away when the time comes to pay it and then just bring in somebody else up. That's what the Rays do.
Yeah, I mean, the Orioles sucked for so long, and all the while they were building a farm system, and then now they're a really good team. But you have to either have to pay or build, or in the Dodgers case, both. And the White Sox won't do either, you know, and not only not paying players, it's, you know, I was talking to my buddy Gary yesterday, and I was like, you know, the baseball is hard because it's not just the salary cap that's preventing things from being competitive. It's you could put a cap in baseball and you're still going to have teams that just continuously suck and teams that continuously do well, because it's not the things that are beyond the cap. Having a facility in the Dominican Republic, having a facility in Japan, having quality or a robust and quality analytics department.
Are you willing to pony up the dough to expand your analytics and development department by 150%?
Yeah, I would bet the Cubs analytics team is at least 5 times as big as the White Sox. The White Sox analytics team is Tony La Russa and a beer. every once in a while, having his grandson text Hawk because he doesn't know how to work a iPhone. I need some help with analytics. Call, text Hawk and ask him who's got the TWTW.
Tony La Russa shows up on day one with like a 1987 tax calculator with like the big roll of paper.
He's like, I calculated this out that we got 153% chance of kicking ass today and drinking beer. And I'm all out of ass.
Tony, rawr, you fell asleep again.
Oh, God. Yeah, but that's, I mean, put a cap in, and the White Sox are still going to struggle because they're not willing to put the money into facilities and organizational needs. It's not just the players.
Well, and you know what else strikes me too? We're going to go back to those comments Tony La Russa said about, or not Tony La Russa, Jerry Reinsdorf, what he said about Chris Getz being the decision maker. Here's the thing. not only did you say, oh, well, except for budget, that's up to the owner. You also said that you didn't want another rebuild. So you don't want to do another rebuild. So aren't you kind of dictating the direction yourself to Chris Getz?
Chris Getz is a yes man. That's the fact. Jerry did not want to hear negativity from outsiders. So he promoted from within. So somebody cheap, he's somebody that's a yes man and didn't have to hear anything bad. And that's the answer.
Yeah, it's just, it's the fact that Tony La Russa, haven't heard from him in 10 years, however long it's been. And we all have this stereotype, like Jerry view of who he is. And he confirmed virtually every single one.
Yeah. It, you know, and, you know, we're hearing now that Rick Hahn tried to quit and was told that that he wouldn't be allowed to work for another team because they were going to hold him to that contract.
It's so messed up.
So Rick Hahn, you know, was clearly a puppet. And
yeah. You heard the story from David Kaplan about Ryan McGuffey, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Man.
Like, Rick, blink twice if you need help. But yeah, it's a shitty situation, and you know, we're going to be stuck with this. And you know, what's the plan?
Contend next year. That's the plan.
You're not going to contend.
Not like this.
It's a frustrating spot to be in when, you know, here's the thing is Chris Getz this genius that, you know, was held back by Rick and Kenny. Is that what the answer is?
I mean, what you hope for is that Chris Getz, with the money he does have, makes good signings. You know, you're not going to make any big splashes, but if you can smartly identify, you know, some holes that you could plug in and maybe some guys that are undervalued, that's kind of hope what you can get, or you hope that maybe he could pull off a few trades here or there that can either set you up better for short-term or long-term, whether that's trading prospects for, you know, established guys or making kind of swap trades where you're taking a combination of prospects and, you know, guys on your team and turning that into something else. I mean, to me, outside of Luis Robert, you look at the value of what you have on your team, and the problem is there's just not a lot there.
I mean, Cease potentially will.
Oh, but that value's dropped.
I mean, if he comes back and bounces back, I think the value will bounce back. But Luis Robert is really it.
I mean, who's going to give you a lot and pay for Yoan Moncada right now?
Nobody. Liam Hendricks is hurt. Like who is the trade value?
Eloy Jimenez, you're gonna try to find a taker for him?
I don't know what his value is gonna be.
I don't know either. I mean, in terms of raw talent, there's value there, but he's hurt a lot.
So let's move on to the Cubs. You know, record wise, you can't be too sad what happened this week. You took 2 or 3 from Milwaukee and you split with Cincinnati. But in all honesty, you know, you probably should have swept Milwaukee and won at least 3 of 4 from Cincinnati.
I won't complain too much about 2 or 3 from the Brewers. I mean, you dug yourself a deep hole with Tyone putting you behind 4-0 in the opener against Milwaukee, but the two losses of the Reds were absolute gut punches. I mean, back-to-back nights of blowing a lead in the ninth inning and losing on a walk-off. And listen, I do think it was bound to happen to lose a game like that. It's the fact that you lost two in a row. Listen, let's say they hung on and won Friday night and you sweep that doubleheader, you win today, and let's just say you blow Saturday night's game. You can live with that. It's like, okay, whatever. It hurt a little more with losing the two. Now, the thing is, going into that Cincinnati series, I said I'd be happy with a split. And a split's not the worst thing in the world still. It just sucks you lost the games that you did. I mean, especially because your pitching held the Reds at bay for the most part. And we know the Reds could put up a million runs at Great American Ballpark. You had Javier Assad go 8 shutout innings only to get that wrecked. Really? I mean, obviously...
Why didn't he finish that game?
Right. Or at least have Merriweather... Mark Leiter should not be in a save situation in the ninth inning.
No. And if he's, you know, Rossi's like, oh, well, he's gassed. Well, then stop putting him in critical situations.
Right. It makes no sense. I mean, that was a moment where I was more than happy with saying, you know what, David Ross, this is on you. You know, at the same time as well, it's hard to win when you score a grand total of, what, 3 runs in 2 games, you know, against the Reds pitching staff in Cincinnati. That really didn't help. So it was good to see the bats come alive today, and they needed that. They needed that bat. You would have really felt icky going back home, losing 3 or 4 to the Reds. And the Reds are in a playoffs. They're in a playoff race. I mean, I'm not saying they're a bad team, but the Reds were kind of reeling going into that series. If you don't blow those games, you really could have buried them.
Oh yeah, and then really padded your lead in the wild card race.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, luckily, last night when they lost the 1-0 game in the ninth inning, at least other teams around you lost in the wild card race, so the damage wasn't nearly as bad. And you know what? It's one of those things where you say, had the Cubs just flat out lost those two games, it was a back and forth battle, I think we'd be more accepting of it. It's just, man, that Friday night game, you were 2 outs away from winning that game and winning that series at least 3 of 4. And you knew that it was going to come down to a hairy situation in the bottom of the ninth when you had bases loaded, 1 out in the first, 2 on, 1 out in the second, and you couldn't get a single run across. When you wasted those scoring opportunities, you knew that was going to spell danger for you. And you know what? The Cubs have been able to get away with a few things over the past few weeks, whether that was, you know, the bullpen being a little shaky but still hanging on, or the offense kind of going cold. You were able to get away with that, and you kind of finally just didn't in those two games, where when something kind of went wrong, it finally fully bit you in the butt.
Yep. But, you know, the wild part for me is that, you know, my hope was looking at the pitching matchups against the Brewers. You're like, oh, you win that first game and you're probably going to lose those next two. And it's the reverse. You can't beat Miley, but you beat Burns and Woodruff.
Well, the problem with game one is that you were in a hole early. So all Wade Miley had to do was go out there and nibble on the corners and induce soft contact. I think you were able to get to Miley easier had you not dug yourself a 4-0 hole right off the bat.
But, you know, looking forward is we've got the two teams that are closest to us in the wild card race in the next two series. And we've got some of our more solid pitchers going into the series against the Giants. We got Steele, Hendricks, and Wicks.
You know, obviously there's going to be a lot to look at over the next few series, because you got to play teams that are also in the wild card race. You're playing the Giants, you're playing the Diamondbacks, and then at the end, you're going to be playing the Brewers. Now, the Brewers might have the division wrapped up by then, but either way, if you're in a wild card chase, those still are going to be important games. So going on with Cubs talk, just for all of our listeners, Sean had to bail here, so I'm going to be finishing the show myself. As we continue to talk about the Cubs here on Swirsky Sports, I think that it's really important that we go into this final stretch and that we're able to just maintain ourselves. You know, we're going to lose some games. You're going to have some tough moments, but you got to just stay in control of what you're doing. Because I do think that if you just play competitive baseball the rest of the way, you know, slightly above 500, you know, hopefully that should be enough to get you in. You're in a playoff spot right now, but, you know, you don't want to let up. You got to beat the teams that are in the race with you. So you're going to want to beat the Giants. You're going to want to beat the Diamondbacks. If you can ideally, you know, I mean, let's say you got 7 against the Diamondbacks. Best, you know, if you win 4 of those and you win at least 1 against the Giants, you know, that is probably going to be a pretty good way to approach things. Obviously, you want to win every game. You're just not realistically going to win every single game. So just kind of keep chugging along here. What you did against the Brewers, win 2 out of 3, that's real good. Splitting against the Reds, not the end of the world. Again, frustrating, but, you know, overall, if you would have told me in the stretch against the Brewers and the Reds, you know, 4 games with the Reds, 3 with the Brewers, you know, if you would have told me that you would come away with the wins that they did get, just in terms of the numbers. So the fact that you won 4 of those games, okay, you know, that I think I'd be pretty happy with that overall. 4 games between those two series. Yeah, you know, that's, I think you can live with that. So going forward, that's kind of what you want to see. Now, what was good about the finale against the Reds was the fact that you saw some guys hit that had been in horrific slumps. You saw Dansby Swanson, who has been in a slump for a month now, get a few hits. You saw Jamer Candelario hit a home run, his 2nd in 2 days, which is good because he was in a pretty bad slump. You were able to see the team knock some hits together and score a ton of runs, because you're going to need some of these slump busters to happen and maintain over this final stretch if you want to stay succeeding. It's really hard to maintain a successful record when a lot of your key lineup guys are not hitting. You know, you need Dansby Swanson to hit more consistently down the stretch here. You want the same thing from Jamer Candelario, too. And listen, Morel's been in a slump. Miguel Amaya has been in a slump. You know, you have a number of guys that have been in a slump. And I wrote an article for Cubby's Crib. Also got to talk about this article on 670's Fly the W podcast, so be sure to check that out as well. Just about some of these slumps. You know, you've been able to get away with it with some of the pitching that you had, and the fact that Cody Bellinger is just, he is unreal. I mean, he is playing at an MVP level. I never would have suspected that going into this year. He is playing at an MVP level. It has saved your ass. Look what he did again this series. Had another really big series in Cincinnati. He hit multiple home runs. He had, again, more instances of him just poking the ball for RBI singles. He's going all over the field. He's hitting for some power as well. He has been the X factor of this offense. Every time there's a runner in scoring position and Cody Bellinger comes up, you almost just sit there and feel like he's going to come through. And more often than not, over the past month or so, he has. He has come up absolutely huge time after time again. But you need more than that. It's nice to see Ian Happ warm up a bit. It's nice to see Seiya Suzuki. He's been hitting pretty well over the past few weeks, but you need consistency, because we can easily see Seiya Suzuki over the next 2 weeks go in a big slump again. The same thing with Ian Happ. We've seen it very often with these prolonged slumps with a lot of these guys. And listen, that's part of baseball. It happens. It's just you want the team more or less clicking when you need it most down the stretch here in September. Because this is crucial. You are fighting to get a playoff spot. You're in a playoff position now, but you need to keep winning to get it. And, you know, you need production across your lineup, you know, fairly good production. You don't need every guy to go 4-for-4 every night, but you want more consistent production. And again, we see how quickly these guys can turn on and off. We've seen Seiya go through some really rough slumps. We're seeing Dansby Swanson go through a really rough slump. And, you know, another guy to mention too, Mike Tauchman had 4 hits today. He was in a horrific slump going into this game. You just want that consistency. Now, there's one little grudge I do have to pick with the Chicago Cubs organization. You called up one of your more notable prospects in Alexander Canario prior to the Red Series. He didn't get a single at-bat. Not one at-bat. That is just not acceptable to me. It might not matter in the long term. In hindsight, might not mean anything. I don't think that's acceptable either way. You're not telling me you can't get him one at-bat in that whole series, in a 4-game series? Especially when you had a favorable matchup with a lefty the one night? You couldn't DH him? You're trying to kind of bolster things? And there's no guarantee Canario would be hitting dingers left and right, but the fact that they came out and said he's the last guy on your roster, he's one of your notable prospects. And you're just going to let him rot in the bench? I get you might not get him in every day. Okay. But not once over these 4 games? Not one stinking at bat? I think that's ridiculous. Hopefully he gets some at-bats going forward here. We'll see. I think it's ridiculous. So I just had to get that off my chest. But going forward, you know, another thing too, when you look at it from a pitching perspective, you got to hope that you also get continued success from Justin Steele, who was awesome against the Brewers. He looked like an ace that night. And Kyle Hendricks, who looked absolutely awesome in the finale, which they won against the Brewers. That's got to make you feel pretty good seeing those things happen. Jordan Wicks didn't have his best stuff against the Reds, but he was efficient enough to put together a solid start, and you won the game. And you know what? He's a rookie. He's going to go through some growing pains. That's the nature of being a rookie. It's going to happen. It's just a shame that Jameson Taillon has been as bad as he's been. Because there was a point mid-season where it looked like he was turning a corner in July. And you felt good. You said, okay, maybe the Cubs are trying too hard to tinker with him. Maybe he just needs a little time to adjust. And maybe say, hey, listen, this is how I want to pitch. This is how I'm used to pitching. Just let me do my thing. But then it's just regressed back. And the weird thing is that you look at his last few starts, and it looked like he'd be lucky to get through the third without not giving up 7 or 8 runs. But it's been a weird thing where he's able to like get to 6, either through 6 or nearly 6. The numbers aren't good, but you're like, well, it's not a quality start, but he got you to the 6th inning and he kind of calmed things down to the point where it didn't go completely off the rails. It wasn't good, but you know, we've seen starters who come out of the gates looking like that, lucky to go 3 or 4 innings. It's like he just gets to an absolute dog crap start and kind of settles in a little bit. But here's the reality. You paid him a 4-year deal. You're paying him a lot of money. You're not paying him to go 6 innings and 5 earned. You're not paying him to give you just bleh starts. Not awful starts, but bleh starts. You're paying him to be much better than that, and you're not seeing it. And it's this isn't fluky that we're watching. Early in the season, it looked a little more fluky, but you watch some of the starts now, and you're like, I mean, that's a flat pitch right down the dick. I mean, that's batting practice. It's clearly just not effective pitching. Even if you do somewhat salvage it, like he has. It's you go from a potential awful outing to just a very not good outing. Either way, it's not what you're looking for. You're looking for much better. He has a great attitude. He's a pro about it. He seems like a good guy. But going into next year, you just pray that he turns it around. And that at least in this final stretch, he could just be serviceable. If you can go 6 innings, 3 or 4 runs and keep them in the game, it feels like a win at this point. I mean, look at his last start against the Brewers. He got shelled in the first inning, gave up 4 runs, and then kind of kept you in the game the rest of the way. Okay, but you can't be digging holes like this. And you know, it's the same thing with Smiley. And frankly, Smiley looks better out of the bullpen. So that was the right move to move him there. Unfortunately, you need someone to start. You know, maybe could you give Shane Green a start or two? Maybe you do. You're kind of duct taping a lot of this rotation together with Marcus Stroman being out. You hope that Jordan Wicks can keep it up, because if he can give you solid, not necessarily great, but solid, that's all you can really hope for at this point. It's not set up for postseason success, but like I said before, you're hoping to get to the postseason. That's really kind of your goal here. I mean, we understand that this team is not good enough to go all the way. But if you could just get there and build off that, that's what feels good. So really, the main focus here is just getting there by any means necessary. And it is kind of remarkable that the Cubs are where they are when you've had to kind of duct tape a lot of this together, particularly the rotation and some parts of the bullpen. It seems like you've got a lot of the bullpen figured out, but you know, you are seeing some leaks. As good as Leiter has been, you know, over this full season, you're starting to see him leak a little bit. And if he's got the splitter, he looks really good. But when he doesn't have it, it's batting practice. I really like Albert Alzolay, and he's overall been an effective closer. I just wouldn't call him a dominant closer. We've seen games where he's just not dominating. He's able to get through it, but, you know, there's some chinks in the armor. And this is not me saying I want Albert Alzolay taken away, gone, out of the closer role. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, for as effective as Alzolay is, and as much as I like him in that role, because I think that is the role for him, he's not Mariano Rivera, where you can say he's just going to go out there and dominate you. You have no chance. He's done a very good job, but there are some chinks in that armor. And as good as he's been, it was kind of bound to catch up to him in that game against Cincinnati, the first loss. You felt like he was due for a blown save. He could come right back and look really, really good again. I'm not saying this that it's who he is. It felt like he was due for a blown one. It's going to happen. You know, it's hard to be perfect. You're never going to be perfect. And it just felt like he was due for one. Not saying that's what it's going to be like from now on. It felt like he was due. And, you know, to his credit, he's been so good where you can say, hey, a blown save or two isn't going to necessarily change my opinion, but I do think it is worth pointing out at the type of closer he is. You know, I, I, overall, I'm very happy with him. I don't have any desire to move him out of the role. But, you know, again, not Mariano Rivera quite yet. And the other thing, too, is it's technically back-to-back blown saves because, you know, he hit the batter against Milwaukee to tie the game. But you know what? He came into a dirty situation, so I'm not really that mad at him about that. I'm going to give him a pass on that. And the Cubs took the lead, and they were able to close it out and get the win. So no harm done in that one. This is going to be a roller coaster of emotions over these last few weeks for the Cubs. Because we're at that point where not making the postseason would feel like a disappointment. Not devastating, but a disappointment for the position we're in. You just want to get there no matter what it is. I don't think they're going to catch Milwaukee. You never know. You never know. I just don't think it's going to happen. Could be wrong, but I feel like wild card is the most likely way to get into the postseason for this team. Whatever wild card spot that is, 1, 2, or 3. I'd like it to not be 3. I don't really want to play the Brewers and have to face that pitching in the postseason. But either way, I'd be happy just to get in. So we'll see how this next week goes. So I think the last thing I'm going to touch on is we may be 1 week away from Bears kickoff, but we are 1 month away, just about a month away, little more, from Connor Bedard making his NHL debut with the Blackhawks. And I am just so excited. The ice is down and painted at the United Center. I'm just so ready for it. I am so, so ready to watch Connor Bedard. And there is something circulating on Twitter. We don't know how true this is, but this source has been right about things before, and I just want to share it. It's by John Dietz. And, you know, he is a writer for the Daily Herald. But again, he's called other things. So it may be true, may not be. But there's rumblings of Patrick Kane possibly signing with the Detroit Red Wings. Because Kane is making progress on his recovery. And there might be interest from Detroit to bring him in. Patrick Kane, the longtime Blackhawks great, arguably the best Blackhawk ever, could be in a Detroit uniform. And I know a lot of people, a lot of Blackhawks fans, would feel absolutely sick about that. For me, I'd say, hey, keep playing. Good for you. Come back from your injury and get back on the ice wherever you may be. I don't think Patrick Kane's got that many years left. This regime is completely new now. We're moving into a new era. Me personally wouldn't bother me as much. I don't think it would be anywhere near what Blackhawks fans in the late 90s had to watch with when Chris Chelios was sent there. And he won Stanley Cups. Don't think that's quite the same with this. If Kane was in his prime and the Detroit was, you know, on the verge of winning a Stanley Cup, then, oh yeah, it would feel like that. But in this scenario, when you know you're in a completely new era and you're, you know, you're moving on with a new scheme and, you know, Patrick Kane is getting up there in age and, you know, maybe he's got a few solid years in the NHL left, but the Showtime Patrick Kane that we knew in Chicago, it was apparent that that era was coming to an end for a while now. And he's what, 35, 36, whatever he is. He's in his mid-30s. He's got a lot of wear and tear on him. I think to me, it's just whatever. But that's my opinion. We'll see how that progresses. It'll be interesting because at the end of the day, I'd just like to see him play next year, wherever that may be. We know it's not going to be with the Hawks, so that'll definitely be an interesting story to follow as that develops. But with all that said, I think that's going to do it here on Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank you all for listening. I want you, please hit subscribe if you have not already, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Be sure to check us out at Swirsky Sports at SwirskySports.com. Check out us on Twitter or X, if you want to call it that, at Swirsky Sports. You can check me out at ShyFanPat1 or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the stuff that I do. And please, please be sure to cheer the Bears on loud and hard this coming Sunday. I don't know how it's going to go, but the Bears need the fans there loud and proud. So let's bring that for them. So until next time, thank you for listening. And please remember one last thing. Bear down.
Comes in. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...